This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now, the business world is a tough environment, and as we progress into a future workforce that demands adaptability, we have to reassess how we look at the concept of leadership. Hi, I'm Frida Liu, and today on Raise Your Game, I'm speaking to Rajiv Peshawaria, CEO and executive from Eclif, and BFM's very own Malik Ali about this much talked about topic called leadership. So Rajiv, you wrote this book called Open Source Leadership. Let's start with that as a base. And what drove you to the conclusion that traditional industrial age thinking needs a massive upgrade, and to putting that idea into your book?
Well, thank you. A few things got me thinking. First of all, there is a clear trend away from full-time employment towards the gig economy. And people working in the gig economy are called free agents. And by the definition, free agent means they have a lot of freedom. They don't have bosses. They keep their own time. They're free to do two or three gigs at the same time. And in the US and in the UK, already 40% of the workforce is a free agent. Malaysia is 33%. Oh. So it's not just a Silicon Valley or Western phenomena. So the big question was, can companies that still employ traditional full-time employees, can they afford not to give the same freedom to their employees that gig employees have? Because if they don't, you're going to lose people to that 40%, which is soon going to be 50%.
Right. Now, has the concept of leadership changed over the years, or is it still the same? People still have the same thinking and mentality about it?
So I'll say two things. The concept of leadership hasn't changed since thousands of years. However, leadership has been misunderstood for thousands of years also. So what do I mean by that? Leadership is seen by most people as what I do to others. So I have power over you, and I will either influence you with my power or with my skills. So most of leadership training and leadership development is either about how to accumulate power or how to accumulate skills. Whereas we think that leadership, right, from the beginning was never about what you do to others. It's what you do to yourself. Mm. Leadership is about a burning desire to create a better future. And it's about not giving up in the face of resistance. It's not about me trying to influence you. So this is the misunderstanding. We either have been confusing leadership with power and influence, with skills, and also we've been confusing leadership with followership, by the way. Mm. When we have kids, the first thing we teach them is how to obey. And if you don't obey, you'll be whacked. In the boardroom, when the CEO presents a new business plan, the first question the board asks is it a confirmed best practice? If it is, you may follow it. Mm. Leadership actually should be a burning desire to create a better future.
All right. Now, I just want to talk about the book again. Open Source Leadership is backed by research in 28 countries. Among other issues, the book argues convincingly that positive autocracy must replace democratic leadership. The other thing was talent and innovation are abundant, not scarce. And early identification of high potentials is counterproductive. And setting employees free to do as little as they want will increase productivity. So I want to dissect all these different points. Firstly, though, what is positive autocracy?
Okay. So here's what happens. If you have closed your eyes and imagined a better future and you want to go about doing it, one thing you can be sure of, you're going to get a lot of resistance. And so one way is to spend a lot of time trying to build consensus so that you can move forward. And what we are saying is in today's 24/7 connected economy, consensus is not even possible. Why? Because everybody is connected and therefore everybody has a voice. And if everybody is connected and everybody has a voice, laws of averages says opinions are going to be 50-50. So in any argument, half the people are going to be on one side of the argument, other half are going to be on the other. How will you build consensus? You will get old by the time you build consensus. And today's economy is also about speed. If you don't implement something quickly, your idea is gone. Somebody else is going to take it, right? So how do you balance the need for creating a better future with speed when consensus is not even possible? So we asked people in 28 countries, which is better, inclusive leadership or autocratic leadership? Where did this question even come from? You look at any literature on leadership, offline or online, and you will find that it sings the praises and virtues of inclusive, I love you all kind of leadership. Whereas you have people like Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Lee Kuan Yew in our backyard, who rocked the history of the planet by doing the exact opposite, by being autocrats. Mm. And in the light of speed that I just talked about, what do you do? So we asked 28 countries, 18,000 people, what do you think? And funnily enough, every country, the majority of the people said autocratic leadership is the need of the hour, without exception. Right. We thought we'll see differences by country. Every country returned, total of 75% of our database, agreed or strongly agreed, autocratic leadership is required today more than ever before.
So when I think of these people, I also think of the likes of Nelson Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi. Would you put them in this sort of category?
Interesting that you asked the question. I actually argue that both Gandhi and Mandela were autocrats. Now, why do I say that? When Gandhi was trying to fight for India's independence, the popular notion was that let's kick the British out with guns and knives. He said, no, we'll do it with love and nonviolence. When Mandela became president, what did the population, the majority population of South Africa want? They wanted an eye for an eye. They wanted revenge. He said, no, we will offer forgiveness and reconciliation. His wife and daughter left him. Even then, he didn't give up his value of forgiveness and reconciliation.
Right.
So if that is not autocratic, then what is?
Right.
So in fact, what I'm saying is nothing new. People tell me, oh, this is great, new ideas, and they're not. Yeah. You see, history is, you know, studded with shining examples of autocratic leadership.
Malik is here as well. Yeah. Malik, you know, 10 years with BFM, what is your leadership style? 10 years on, has your leadership style changed?
Yeah. It's interesting. I think when Rajiv talks about positive autocracy and open source leadership, I generally, for sure, in terms of personality, in terms of style, certainly come from that consultative angle. And I remember even as a kid, for some reason, I've always been, you know, chosen as captain for teams. But I always had this nemesis who was a very good friend of mine, still is. And he's usually captain of the other team. And we'd pick our players. And no matter what number of players, the mix of players we assemble for both of us, my consultative style playing versus this sort of, I think, autocratic style playing of my this good friend of mine, he always wins. I'm like, something is wrong. And that has come with me. If you talk to some investors, people always say, Malik, you're too nice. You're too nice. I'm like, so to me, I always had a natural style for sort of very consultative. And as you know, Frida, sometimes decisions are a little bit like, you know, yeah. a little bit like hanging in the air because I'm sort of balancing interests and things like that. So the good news is that there's a lot of autonomy within the organization with that. I mean, at the end of the day, I devolve it to our team leaders within the organization to make decisions. I only step in when sometimes I see team leaders practicing things which I think are a little bit like, okay, you're not listening or you're not this. That's when I step in. But generally, just leave things as be. So I do veer towards that side in terms of style, but I do know sometimes that there are times when I feel that, Malik, you got to kind of like step in here because people need direction. And this is a time when consultation does not thing. I actually believe in something called a little bit about situational leadership sometimes, but I find it really hard, even today, to kind of like become that directive thing. It's still, you know, at the age of 52, I'm still struggling with it. I'm always constantly thinking, how can I do this better? You know, and should I be more directive sometimes when there's an urgent situation? I think the answer is yes. But I think as a default scenario, allowing people to make decisions about their teams and the team leaders to surface things, I think that's a great default scenario. But I think when it comes to this sort of exceptional situations where you have to do something urgently and quickly, then I think Raj's point about positive autocracy actually does come into play.
Right. When you talk about leadership as well, personality comes into play as well.
No, actually.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Actually, there's no conflict, Malik, with what you're saying and what I'm saying. You know, even if you wanted to be autocratic, you cannot be, because today everybody is so empowered. Ordinary people are more empowered than ever before in human history. Because everybody has a weapon of mass destruction in their pocket, a mobile phone with social media connectivity. So how can you be autocratic? Data says be autocratic. How can you be autocratic? Look at the Arab Spring. Look at what happened to people like Travis Kalanick of Uber and Elon Musk recently. Even if you want to be autocratic, you can't be. Now comes to the point, so that we call this the 21st century leadership dilemma. Now, coming back to your point, Malik, about the fact that, you know, situational leadership is that sometimes I feel like I need to direct, but otherwise I prefer to let things be. Actually, this is where positive autocracy comes in. You shouldn't feel the need that I need to really be directive today versus tomorrow if you practice positive autocracy. So what is positive autocracy? There are five keys to it, but I'll talk about one or two of them. One of them is giving people freedom within a framework, right? Freedom within a framework says here are the values and here is the overall purpose of the organization. And that framework is not negotiable. This is what we are trying to do for the world, purpose, and we are a high-purpose company. And these are the values that we will live by. And if we have to compromise the values, we'd rather compromise our success. And within that, people should have the freedom to do what they want. And as long as that clarity of purpose and organizational values guides decision-making, then your need to be directive goes away for the most part. So that's one way to balance that. The other key, I'll talk about one more, is that you have to literally earn the right to be autocratic. And you have to earn that every day. Lee Kuan Yew, why did people allow him to be autocratic in Singapore? Because deep down, they knew and believed that he will create a better future for us. He lives the right values and he has a values-based purpose. So we will allow him his quirky autocracy. If he says, don't chew gum, we won't chew gum because I know he's going to take my country to a great place. He was also the master of the dance of the naked autocrat, which is one of the keys. Master the dance of the naked autocrat. What that means is it's like two opposites, but you have to do them at the same time.
Okay.
On the one hand, you remain totally autocratic about your values and your purpose. You've thought through your values and your purpose slowly, deliberately, carefully. Now, don't let the world rain on your parade. At the same time, be totally humble and compassionate with people. And you can do both. That is the challenge of 21st century leadership.
Right. Anyway. We'll talk a little bit about the upcoming Leadership Energy Summit, which is happening on November 14 and 15. After this, I'm here with Rajiv Peshwaria from eCliff and BFM's Malik Ali. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Racy Gabriel Liu here. I'm listening to Rajiv Peshwaria from eCliff and BFM's Malik Ali. We're talking about the Leadership Energy Summit Asia 2018, which is happening in a couple of days, November 14 and 15. Tell us about this year's theme, Rajiv.
So this year's theme is on open source leadership, that the world is changing, and how does leadership need to change? Not just from a technology change everybody's talking about, but what about the people and culture side of it? We have some amazing speakers this time. We have Richard Quest of CNN. In fact, he and I are going to debate on stage on this question that you were asking me earlier, autocratic versus inclusive. He's going to challenge me big time on it. And if I've survived the breakfast grill, then I can take on Richard Quest. Bring it on, right? We have some fintech experts coming in. Brett King, who's the guru in the fintech area. We have Julia Kim, who is the architect of Bhutan's Gross National Happiness Index.
Ah.
I actually strongly believe that happiness, success, and leadership are the same thing. So she's going to talk about real happiness. We've got Samuel West, who is the founder of a very unusual museum called the Museum of Failure. And he's going to talk about how without failure, there cannot be any success. We will also have master classes by our own faculty. The whole idea behind why we do this summit and the eCliff Leadership Energy Awards as part of the summit is to change this definition of leadership away from power and influence towards creating a better future using the right values and purpose.
Okay, we'll talk about the awards in just a moment. I still want to go back to your book, which is very interesting. A couple of things that I wanted to bring up as well. One of the points was you talk about early identification of high potentials is counterproductive. Why is that?
So, you know, every board of a large company expects at least once a year that their management presents them with some proof that they're doing something about succession planning. And the standard practice with succession planning is this. So you box people in 9 boxes. So on the one axis is performance, on the other axis is potential. And the people in the top right-hand box, high performance, high potential, these are the people we must give coaches and mentors. These are the people who should be sent for overseas assignments so that they become the future leaders of the company.
Right.
So how are these people selected? Through a combination of psychometric tests and evaluations, through some assessment centers, and through a committee that says we've watched their performance and these people are going to be the future. So once and for all, you've decided that these are going to be the future leaders. So you've created the haves and the have-nots in the company. We are arguing that in the open source economy, where more and more people are going to the gig economy, you've got to turn this upside down and you've got to open source succession planning as well. What if instead of all that machinery, every year the CEO gave a challenge to all the employees? Any idea that you have to do something for this company that is worthwhile, top line, bottom line, anything. Form a team, complete a detailed project submitted by a certain date. You've got to do this over and above your day job. And there's no necessity. You don't have to participate, only if you want to.
Right.
Now, the people that work the midnight oil and give you these detailed projects year after year after year are screaming, saying, I want to be a leader in the future in this company. I have the energy. The problem with early identification is some people fizzle out quickly. Some people are late bloomers. You leave them out. You were talking about situational leadership, Malik. I'm calling it situational passion. Let's tap into people's situational passion. I may have passion for something today, so I'll participate. So you want employees to act like owners and entrepreneurs? Well, then set them free.
Right. And, but it, how do you then tie it back to what the organization mission statement and goals are?
Well, again, remember freedom within a framework? Mm. You have made it very clear what the vision, mission, and values of the organization are. And everything has to happen within that framework. Anybody outside that framework has to be rejected.
Right.
People should be so clear about the vision, the mission, and the values of the organization and excited by it. Vision, mission, and values are not limiting factors. They are unlimited possibilities open up. What can I do in this mission? What can I do in this vision? How can I play out these values? Endless possibilities. So there's nothing but freedom here.
And it's very interesting because I look back and I don't like doing these tests. When I start, I hate it. And I know that at a certain stage in my life when I was taking care of my child, I love my work, but my energy was spent on my child.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the focus then. And I didn't want to exert more than I needed to
yes.
in the workplace because my focus was different, right? And of course, now that he's growing up, then I can put the energy back into work.
Precisely.
Late bloomer, maybe.
But, you know, but this is exactly one of the points I make in the book is set people free to do as little as they want and you will actually increase productivity.
Okay.
And I'd like to take the example of what you just talked about. Now, whether you like it or not, if you have a certain number of people in your organization, 20% are going to be high performers, 60% are going to be average performers, and 20% are going to be low performers. This is a derivative of an age-old law of nature called 80-20, which was given to us by Wilfredo Pareto in 1906. Okay? So whether you give people tough goals, no goals, lots of freedom, no freedom, it's going to be 20-60-20.
Right.
Now, what if instead of trying to control and motivate people, we let people choose where they want to be? In the top 20, middle 60, or bottom 20? So imagine this conversation when you had your child. Boss, thank you very much. I've worked very hard for the last 5 years and you've rewarded me with promotions, with bonuses. You've been very fair to me. But as you know, I just became a parent. I'd like to now move from the top 20 to the middle 60 for the next year or 18 months until my home situation is sorted. And it's okay for me that you don't give me exceptional bonuses while I'm here. When I come back to the top 20, give me exceptional bonuses. Now, is this a fair conversation? Does it ever take place? No, it doesn't. Why? Because we stigmatize average performance.
Right. Okay, I got an issue. What about the bottom 20?
So now take the same conversation one step further. Boss, I'm going to be honest with you. I like this company, but this job is not my passion. Mm. I need this job to pay the bills. Can we agree, boss, that you give me minimum possible work for minimum possible pay? I'm not ambitious for promotions or anything like that. And I also am willing to take the risk that if you think I'm falling below the minimum, you'll fire me with no questions asked. Another honest conversation that never takes place. My point is, if somebody wants to work at the average level, pay them and reward them at the average level. If somebody wants to work at the minimum level, pay them and reward them at the minimum level. Because your top 20 are going to produce 80% of the results anyway. And it's not that the remaining 60 and the bottom 20 are bad people. Their needs are different.
Right.
And without their support, the top 20
yes.
cannot create the magic. Why not legitimize the whole thing, which anyway is a reality, and pay people accordingly? Why not replace dishonest employment contracts with honesty? Saying, this is what I want to do. Okay, if that's what you want to do, that's what you're going to get paid. It's totally natural. And anyway, it's going to pan out that way. Why not manage your compensation and rewards budget more judiciously by making it honest?
Right.
Radical.
Radical, right?
I like it.
And I want to then talk about the energy awards. Why do you do these awards?
So maybe, Malik, you should talk more about that, but I'll get started and turn it over to you because he's one of the judges of the awards. I don't judge the awards. It's people like Malik and the panel.
He's got
the
heavy responsibility.
Yes,
all right.
It's an international panel of judges, including Malik, who decide. So going back to our definition of leadership, it is a burning desire to create a better future, finding inner strength to not give up in the face of resistance. You see, the default human wiring is that we want to be loved, we want to be liked, we want to be accepted. So if somebody gives us feedback saying, hey, don't do this. Okay, you know, if I don't do it, will you still like me? Yes. That's what how we are wired. But leaders have to stay true to their vision, which means they need to be ready to be unpopular, misunderstood, and lonely until that vision is achieved, because eventually the world will see what they are seeing today. Now, those people who display this strength, we call that leadership energy. And we want more and more people to imagine better futures and find that inner energy to create it. Because if people don't think of leadership in that way, we don't think the world has a better future in the first place. So change this definition of leadership away from power and following best practice towards creating a better future. And the awards are a way for us to spread that message. So we open it up to anybody in Asia Pacific. Anybody can nominate anybody. Three people are chosen by judges. These are great examples of leadership energy. And this year, we've got three winners, one from Malaysia, one from India, and one from Thailand. Amazing stories like previous years. Maybe, Malik, you should talk a little bit more about
that. What was the judging like?
That's interesting because I think at the Leadership Energy Awards is a bit different. It's about, as Rajiv said, about creating folks who sacrifice personally as well as institutionally to create a better future. And I think that's a common theme amongst not just in the winners, but also the fantastic nominations. Basically, there's an emphasis on making that difference, not just to your industry, but make a difference to the world actually. Yeah. So I think that was one of the attractions of this, and looking at the sort of personal sacrifices, leadership, leading by example, they weren't able to do this unless they had an energy that sort of allowed them to motivate people, to encourage folks. I think these are the things that we were looking for. But I must say, it's very different. I judge at other entrepreneurship things, and there are different criteria. This one is quite special. I spoke to Rajiv a little bit about this. I think going forward in the future, I would love to see someone also organize this, not just amongst in the entrepreneurial / social enterprise context, but also in the governmental context. Mm. I think that is important because I think, we talk on the breakfast grill and all that. We kind of like put civil servants and governments into this big bucket of sort of bloated bureaucracy, etc. But there are some shining jewels there that deserve recognition. So I would love to see genuine folks that are trying to change the country through their positions in government. And you say that open source leadership, right? You don't have to be the Secretary General. It's about the people way down that ranking, but who made such a big impact. I think that's the kind of thing I would like to see this sort of leadership energy spread to.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I've always enjoyed Lisa, but for someone who hasn't been, why should they go?
So Lisa is about waking people up. Because, we grow up, particularly in Asia, our parents tell us, work hard, study hard, you'll get a good job. And then the moment you're settled in your job, say, get married, have kids. Then it's all about having the bigger car and the bigger house and this, that, and the other, and then having grandkids, and then one day just leaving the world. So that's how life tends to be. And that leadership energy, which is there in all of us, remains dormant from birth to death. Mm. Every one of us is capable of doing what Nelson Mandela did, which is not give up his dream even through 27 years of prison. But 99% of us don't even know where to find it. So Lisa, and everything we do at Eclipse, for that matter, is about waking people up. Why now? Because the world needs it. We are 7.5 billion people today. We are going to 10 billion. And you can imagine the challenges and opportunities associated with going to 10 billion population. Right. On the one hand, there's lots of consumers and customers to feed and clothe. So businesses are salivating. Mm. On the other hand, food, water, healthcare, world peace. Right. So you have to wake up and think like that. Otherwise, we're going to be doomed.
Right. This country needs to wake up.
Every country needs to wake up.
So for more information, you can go to eclipse.org. You can register and get more information there. I've been speaking to Rajiv Peshwaria from Eclipse and BFM's Malik Ali. You've been listening to Race Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.